Hey guys, Jim Cox, and I'm here today with an interview with David Jones. He is the founder of a company called Thrilling Foods and reached out through LinkedIn and wanted to learn more about his work in terms of where the food industry is moving to. And it's been pretty exciting last couple of years. So wanted to kind of get his vantage point as a business owner, an entrepreneur, and, you know, somebody remaking some real changes. So Dave, thanks for taking the time to chat today.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it, James.
Awesome. So tell us a little bit about how you got into the field of food and developing a food company, founding a food company. Like, what's your background?
Yeah, it couldn't be any more backwards, like me backing into it unintentionally. But so my background is media production. I've been a director, producer, writer, you know, worked behind the camera most all of my life. You know, my father was a film professor at Southern Methodist University. So it just came down to me. And, you know, but during COVID, you know, a lot of my work, you know, was just shut down like a lot of people's were. And I have a partner who's a vegetarian, and we were both interested in, you know, I mean, she appreciated any participation from me, and I did think it was healthier, and I wanted to respect that that's the way, you know, she felt and was raised and had a long history of, so I wanted to learn. So, you know, I began to certainly have no meat in the house and live vegetarian. We were interested in vegan foods and things like that. And, you know, I'd always been as a flexitarian. I mean, all of us eat vegetables and probably have some favorite vegetable meals, like, you know, guacamole and chips and that kind of thing. But, and you know, what Beyond and Impossible were doing, trying to get a burger patty that was good enough to fool people or whatever, it was fascinating, you know, for me. But as I began to try to live that way every day, I sort of started to miss things. And I've been a cook all my life. And in being a documentary film producer, I've also been a researcher. You've got to get absolutely everything unquestionably correct that you present in a documentary or it's garbage. So, you know, I'm a very careful researcher, you know, certainly in science and medicine and, you know, diet, and had my interest there. But as I, you know, thought to myself, I'm missing, you know, meat, I'm missing, you know, steak and bacon and things like that, I began to try some of the things that were out there and pay more attention to what was happening during that time, and tried a lot of the products that were out there. And I gotta say, frankly, I was disappointed by a lot of it. You know, as a meat eater who remembered very clearly what meat was like, I was saying, you know, not only do these things taste nothing like meat, the texture's all wrong, the flavor's all wrong, but the ingredients are kind of frightening when you look at them, you know, protein isolates and things. And I even tried getting some of those ingredients myself to try to do a better job, as in protein isolates and things, but they tasted bad and smelled bad. And as a lifelong cook, I realized, all right, you're dropping off into sort of a an area of industrial cooking that you're unfamiliar with and you're not going to like. And, you know, that's not who I am. I'm not somebody who wanted to make money at an industrial process. I was a cook, a lifelong cook who loved my family and friends by cooking really good, healthy things for them. And so in trying to make a plant-based bacon for me, and Spam and the various different things I was playing with, and for my family, I would share it with, I wanted it to be super healthy. I wanted it to be super tasty. So not just good for the animals that you save, but good for the people that ate it. And so that began about a year and a half more of trying, you know, after looking at the industrial processes that were out there, I began going back to old world traditional foods. And you can't help but look at tofu, because tofu is one of the original vegetarian meat substitutes that's been eaten by cultures for centuries. And when you look at those cultures, they have less heart disease, less cancer than we do. When you specifically look at those cultures who are those people in those cultures who are eating at least one serving of tofu a day, their heart disease and cancer rates are definitely down below America's rate. So that was helpful to me to start focusing in on that. And I thought, okay, what about soybeans? Look, it's got 19 amino acids. You only need, you know, a few, you know, 9, I believe, to grow, you know, human tissue. And, you know, so it has an abundance of them. And so I began to work with tofu and was reminded, as many of us have been, that to try to get flavor into tofu that's already a tofu cake is nigh impossible. You can marinate for a week and cut it open and look, and the marinade hasn't penetrated. You can taste the inside. Marinade just won't penetrate. And I learned later in research that, you know, really it's water phobic, you know, hydrophobic. It's wanting to shed water and not take it in. And so I had to really dig into, you know, what could be done. And, you know, tried to figure out a way to pre-flavor tofu before it was made into a pressed curd cake. And that's where the research came in, because, you know, my initial attempts were total failures. And that's why when you see how tofu is made, it is this, like, man, stir it 8 times in a clockwise motion and interrupt it sideways. You know, it's been made the same way for several hundred years in a very careful process so that you can actually achieve tofu curds out of these soybeans. So anything I would do would cause a failure. And so there was all my research and work to find out what can you do to soybean milk prior to making tofu, and began to get some successes. And decided to go for this bacon, a multi-layer product with high fat in it. It would fry in its own fat. And I, of course, as a person who had made, you know, pork bacon in the past back in Texas, and I learned how to do it in Hungary, you know, in old Europe, I cured the meat that I made out of this multi-layered, multi-flavored, you know, tofu, multi-textured. You know, I cured it with a day in salt and a day in smoke. And I can remember the first day I tried some of that first batch, and I had to smile that I had achieved what I was looking for, which was something craveable. You know, you take a bite, you chew it up, you swallow it, and a little voice in your head says, "Get some more." And that's when I knew I was going to share it, and I began to share it with friends and people, and it blew up from there. And I had to decide what to do next.
That's awesome. So the product itself is all made out of tofu. There's no animal products injected into it or anything like that. It's
completely vegan. Yeah, completely vegan. And we have to be very careful so we can be certified vegan. It's a modified tofu, I'd say. It's not exactly any longer tofu. It's a patented process where the changes are significantly enough different from tofu that we patented it. And because you'll see, you can't fry tofu and get anything like bacon.
So at this point, it's actually serves as a good bacon replacement. Do you have plans as far as expanding the portfolio to other types of replacing other types of products? Like, is it transferable to other things?
Yes, because what we did was make a very lean meat and a very high fat meat that renders. And so part of that process that's patented and talked about is that we have a renderable fat, which is very different than anything out on the market. So that would be included in a lot of things that we do in the future, that we would make, you know, a ham that had a fat cap and, you know, fat marbling through it, and we would smoke and cure that. We'll definitely be doing some spam type thing because people love masubis, and so do I. And we'll be coming up probably with a portfolio of charcuterie, you know, from guanciale, prosciutto, you know, salamis, these fermented types of products. Those are all things we're working on small experiments and have a roster of things to do. But right now, we're just really trying to figure out how to grow as a company just to provide enough bacon to keep up with sales. We're in a negative. We've got sales out a month ahead or so of us trying to stay up with production.
So where does all the production take place? Does it take place in Portland or?
Yes, currently we got one commercial kitchen that was about 1,500 square feet because there's not a lot of options here for stepping into anything else. And then we got a second commercial kitchen next door to it to expand the operations into there. And now we're looking also in Portland for at a property that will give us a 10 times capacity over what we're getting out of these two kitchens.
That's incredible. So how have you found the reception in terms of being able to get funding for your expansion? Like, is there in terms of the financial markets?
On a sort of, you know, initial basis of taking in money, not from these giant institutions, that round is coming, but from smaller investors that we meet and talk to on the way, we've raised over $1 million. That we've put into the growth. So we're getting ready. We just got back from Singapore where we presented to a group of investors there. And so we're getting ready to follow up that effort and raise a 2 to 3 million seed round.
Nice.
Well, we have just every time we give anybody bacon, they go crazy about it. And, you know, it takes them about 3 seconds to realize, wow, the chew, everything is here. And sometimes they cuss. That's my favorite when they say a curse word, but in a good way.
Yeah. So what, as far as with, when you look at like from a financial perspective as a consumer, I mean, inflation is crushing everybody and especially food inflation. How does like the product that you're developing compare to what else is out there, you know, when you look at the animal products, when you look at like other types of bacon replacements, mm-hmm. like is it a net positive for consumers in terms of their pocketbook, or is it more expensive? Is it?
Yeah, there's a lot to unpack there. You know, commodity bacon is subsidized in many ways by the federal government. If we don't have bacon, we'll revolt. And so, you know, they're smart enough to keep the price down on that artificially. But if you look outside of bacon to other charcuterie, our price is at parity with that. So if you look at a salami per pound or anything like that. But that said, the bacons that we're competing with, the plant-based bacons that we're competing with, are mostly extruded. They're made, you know, in a very fairly simple process of extrusion in a factory. So they're running at about half that cost, like let's say $5.50 a pound, you know, $5.50 a package. It's probably a quarter pound or something, you know, so their price point, they know to put it around $5.50, $6, and prices have been going up. But we have never raised our price since we began to first sell at the stores 2 years ago. We've never raised our price. And although some stores have raised the prices along the way, there's raising the prices of everything, but you know, we have not. So because we already knew we were and are the most expensive plant-based bacon probably in the world, but we're the only one that actually tastes like bacon as well, because we're the only one that's actually cured. There are so many processes in what go into what we do. We have a multi-stream, you know, multi-textured and multi-recipe bacon that is layered. So you have a high fat and lean, and that's done by humans, not machines. And then, you know, it being smoked and hand cut, you know, again, no machines. And one day we'll bring in some machines where they make sense, but we won't change what this is. But at any rate, I'm saying this is basically an artisanal, you know, process. Mm-hmm. And so it's really expensive for us to produce. All the ingredients are totally sustainable and certified, you know, sustainable and so forth. So, though, you know, that's twice as expensive as non-sustainably certified ingredients. So, you know, we feel like you know, our cost is higher than we'd like it to be. We'd love the whole world to be able to have it and soon. So we're going to be working on trying to find ways to bring down, you know, the price. But, you know, in the meantime, we're at parity with other charcuterie.
Nice. So what role as a chef, like what role does flavoring play? Like I, you know, you had mentioned that you didn't like the flavor of like some of the Impossible and Beyond. And like one of the things that I've found is, you know, you take a Beyond or Impossible burger and you add Montreal steak seasoning from McCormick. You know, it's like people forget to use spices, and really spices are really where the flavor comes from, whether it's in terms of, you know, plants, meats, whatever. You know, what role does flavoring play in terms of something like that, in terms of trying to augment the product that you're producing?
I love this question, James. First, let me say that the entire purpose of chefs and probably cuisine got started, as you may have heard, with the fact that spices were great to cover up flaws in flavor, right? You know, the meat was old. We'll add a little spice, and all of a sudden, boom! It's hey, this tastes great. And we do see a lot of plant-based products. And when you look at the ingredients, you're going to see Worcestershire sauce and hot sauce and vinegar and garlic powder and all of these things that I don't think match the flavor profile of bacon. So what's fun for us when you look at our ingredients? I believe there's 7 ingredients, and they're functional. They're not really spiced so much. The one thing, it says natural flavor, and we're going to change that to completely just say it's yeast extract. What that yeast extract gives us is the umami, the meaty umami. It's protein. It is, glutamic acid is produced by yeast. That's, you know, people have been eating yeast. Vegans and vegetarians have been eating yeast with a B12, you know, sprinkled on their stuff. They call it nutritional yeast quite some time, but it's because it has umami in it, like prosciutto does or cantaloupe does. It's a specific protein, glutamic acid, and it sets your tongue off. It's a protein indicator, like you have a sweet indicator or salty indicators in your tongue, you know, your body. Pursue what it wants. And so when your body is wanting protein and you hit glutamic acid, you go bananas, like, oh, here we go. And so, you know, really we're making a side of meat that's just a meaty, neutral taste before it's salted and smoked and then fried. So, you know, you're just getting a big back meat taste. There's no garlic. There's no, you know, we do use pepper on the top, but that's part of an old world cure. Pepper is microbial. And the Germans, you know, would do that down in Texas where I'm from, and it's fun. But so it's interesting that when you look at our label versus the label of other plant-based bacons and things, we don't have really spice for the sake of like let's put some garlic and some onion powder in there. You could do that, but you won't need to. The flavor of bacon comes from a cure. The difference between a side of pork and a side of bacon, it's the exact same thing, except one's been cured a day in salt and a day in hardwood smoke. And that cure is what gives bacon its flavor. Nothing else, no spices. There's nothing in those cures traditionally. Yeah, somebody could throw in cayenne pepper or decide to do something. But for hundreds of years out of Europe, the cure was preservation. But that preservation of that meat, so it would last through the winter and what have you, was strictly functional. Salt and smoke, two antimicrobial, very strong antimicrobial treatments. But we got to know it as bacon. We got to know it as a taste that we love. And so that's all we do. The predominant taste of our bacon comes from the cure. We just take a slab of protein meat that has a kind of an umami taste to it, fatty and lean, and just cure it. And we end up with a very, very authentic tasting bacon.
That's awesome. So how far distributed is the product now? Like, is it mainly a West Coast product? I can't remember that I've seen it in stores on the East Coast at this point.
Right. Our distribution is in its infancy in that we do self-distribute from Hawaii to Portland, Maine. So, you know, from stem to stern, top to bottom, we self-distribute. So if you go to the website, find, you know, Thrilling Foods, www.thrillingfoods, and go to Find Bacon Near Me, you'll see a map with a pretty liberal distribution. There are heavy points like in Los Angeles and certainly Portland, our home, you'll see the most. But Los Angeles has really adopted us in a big way. We're in every Erewhon store down in LA, along with lots of restaurants and more coming on board all the time. And we have a distributor, Chef's Warehouse Pro Vista, that has a footprint across the United States, but we're rolling out now slowly with them, getting ready to cover the Washington area, certainly Oregon. And we've sent pallets down to Las Vegas because Las Vegas is turning out to be a big consumer of plant-based food.
It's interesting because here in Easton, in Pennsylvania, we actually, every year we have a bacon fest. And I'm actually part of a vegan group, and we go out and we protest the event, you know, trying to educate people on kind of the abuses that go on in animal, concentrated animal farming operations, and really to show people where their food comes from. And it would be amazing to see something like your product in an event like that, where people would just walk away saying, "Oh my God, that's fucking amazing." You know?
I'll come fly in and be on the team with you. And the reason I'm confident that we'll place, we already did it, unbeknownst to us, a really cute couple that own a food cart in Lincoln City, Oregon, on the coast. There was a competition called Bacon and Beer, Bacon and Beer on the Coast or something, right? So they said, can we enter with a vegan bacon? And, you know, it's chefs competing, making dishes with bacon, and lots of breweries show up to, you know, give you some beer. But they said, yes, you pay the $50 entry fee, you know, to charity, whatever, you can compete, we want to. And they won third place against a field of about 30 bacon chefs with bacons. They won the third place, and it was never an issue that it was or wasn't bacon. People just loved their stuff and gave them the award. So
that's awesome.
We can do it. We can do it in your hometown.
That's awesome. Well, I look forward to that, and I will clue you in and make sure you're part of that crowd, because I think that would be, again, an incredible push in terms of like where food is moving. I mean, I really feel like if you would have looked at food like 5 years ago, I feel like, you know, it was kind of same as it always been, and it's kind of like one of those conservative industries that it just is. And you look at it over really the past 2 years, and it's like literally a revolution is taking place. And in a way, it's a revolution that needs to happen, if not just for the animals, but for the climate. I mean, climate change is really being driven, if not by fossil fuels, also by farming operations and the destruction of the planet. So, you know, to be able to offer alternatives to people's taste buds that do not contribute to that is a positive, you know?
Yeah, so many people are surprised if you share the statistics on here's how much soy you need to feed pigs to get this much bacon. And then now let's show you how much bacon we can make with that much soy. Yeah, yeah. Well, if we've already let them taste the bacon, they're going to be mighty impressed. And, yeah. You know, a couple of fun facts about what we've experienced with people and tasting bacon and deciding whether they want to make that change, support that new earth you're talking about, the more sustainable earth, is that I did a survey just to find out how much people thought our product tastes like bacon. Hey, throw a glass bead and jar here and it's zero. You think it tastes zero like bacon, all the way up to 100% like bacon. And I thought, you know, I'd like to segregate the votes. I'll have green beads for those who identify as vegan or vegetarian. And, you know, people that eat meat either on occasion or quite often would grab a red bead. And these are all people that were buying bacon. I said, hey, take our survey because, you know, love to know. Turns out 2/3 of the beads were red. So 2/3 of our repeat buyers people who are buying bacon identify as meat eaters in one way or the other. And that was a huge surprise to me. But the other surprise was the distribution of where the little green and red beads were was pretty identical. There wasn't a difference in how vegetarians and vegans perceived it to be more or less like bacon. Both groups placed bacon very much, you know, some at 100, more at 90 or 80%, and some at 70%. And that was the distribution, right around really 80 to 90% like bacon. And that's tasting it straight up, just bacon naked. And what I'd like to point out is that most of your, you know, tasting and dishes and things, if you share an Impossible Burger with a crowd, you're going to do it as a hamburger with cheese and bacon and, I mean, excuse me, with lettuce and tomato, mustard, mayonnaise, a bun, and it's going to do pretty well. But if you just put it out there like we do, naked, your taste buds really are discerning. And we get a great response just giving them straight up bacon. We don't cover up the taste by putting it in something. We want to share what this stuff tastes like all by itself. That said, for us as well, I believe the human could say, oh, that 70, 80, 90, you know, 70, 80, 90% like bacon because it is all by itself. But once you put it on a baked potato with sour cream and stuff, or in macaroni and cheese, or on a salad, or in a sandwich, I don't believe there are very many humans on the planet that can actually discern then the difference between our bacon and traditional pork bacon. It's too much of a job for your taste buds through all of that other noise of food to discern. What you get is that satisfying crunch and chew, fatty, salty, smoky, and that's what your tongue is aware of. But how close it matches bacon, you just can't pick that out. So we're probably going to be rated. I mean, we could fool a lot of people and make two different sandwiches with bacon, you know, with our bacon with a K, and say which one was pork and which one was plant-based bacon, and probably have a lot of fun with that.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, as a vegan, I had given up on the idea of ever having a BLT ever again, you know. I have never really been a fan of tofu because, like you described, the flavor impenetrability, it just never seemed to be able to work out in terms of with what I could do in terms of my cooking. So, you know, I just kind of gave up on it. What you're telling me is exciting, and it actually changes my attitude to, well, maybe I can look at it a different way and embrace it in a different way. So, you know, it not only does your product benefit, but I think that by having the success, I think you'll also help people kind of embrace other products that might have a similar tofu base.
Yeah, there's room for all of that. And but I'll tell you, the fascinating thing, if you just, you know how you get tofu in little tubs of water, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Put some salt in that water and let it sit for a day, and all of a sudden your tofu will have a lot more flavor. It's astounding to me that the innovation around tofu commercially, whether Asia or here in the United States, is just absolutely at a standstill. There is no innovation. It's a very traditional food, but unfortunately, traditional food that most Americans think tastes like cardboard. And we found that to add salt and flavorings and fats is not forbidden if you do it the right way. So we're going to be coming up probably with a line of just modern tofu, just an updated tofu that people would like. You know,
yeah, it is a that's awesome.
But it actually tastes good.
Well, I look forward to that. What I'm curious, when you have this flow of product that you're producing, you're sold out like a month in advance in terms of the demand for it. Are you as a company at yet profitable? Like, in terms of a going concern, is it something where you're able to continue to perform at this level where you're not burning cash? Because a lot of startups in your position, they have success for a little bit, but then they run out of money. And I mean, obviously we're in challenging economic conditions.
It's true. An excellent question again. I will say that at this very point, when you have growth and you're bringing on new people, new equipment, you have a period of time that those new people are not going to be profitable. the equipment's being amortized across. And so I can say that right now we're really close. And as the people that we're bringing on become more and more proficient to be able to make more bacon easier, quicker, we will reach, no losses whatsoever, probably first of this year, somewhere in January, February. Nice. We're bringing on second shift with inside the same, you know, facilities. So there's some savings there. But what we're really looking for savings is we do not have a packaging line, and we do not have a high-speed German slicer from Weber or competitors. We don't have tofu pumps and the infrastructure to move this stuff. Everything's done by hand. And so we're looking in our design of the new, you know, first real factory, you know, that can produce a great deal of bacon. We're looking at having, you know, equipment that moves things much faster through the mm-hmm. pipeline at each sort of limiting spot where labor has to be done. So we have, you know, confidence that we'll get a very profitable bacon stream going. And then, hey, we'll go unprofitable on all the new products that we design for a while in the same way that, you know, until mm-hmm. you establish your efficiencies, mm-hmm. Probably is at a loss.
I'm curious, like you have this production line that is very, has a lot of human input. It's very like a cottage industry kind of approach to what you're doing. Do you see benefits to the people that you have working there in terms of their ability to innovate and add value to that product, in addition to just what they're supposed to do, like providing feedback or additional innovation? Like, what is there a quantifiable difference which makes that worthwhile to have people doing it instead of just a mass of machines?
Yeah, we do. And you know, we have really intelligent young people that, you know, part of our interview process is that this isn't just a job. This is almost a calling. You know, where are you at? We don't limit it to vegans, but we got covered up with people that want a new world. They're passionate about what they're doing. They want to support this and be a part of this. And they've had the bacon. And so we're really blessed that we're not necessarily staffing, which is folks that aren't happy to come into work. They're, you know, most all of them are college degreed and very passionate and very involved and looking at the process and trying to help. And even when we do have, say, production machinery, you know, we're probably going to be in a learning curve. Not only can that machinery be tweaked or used in different ways, but we can toss it out and you know, it's going to be these same people who are involved in the artisanal process by hand are going to be the people who run this facility and let us know, oh, that's not working or this is working. And so while I develop the process, I get, you know, updates and new SOPs. Here's how we can do it. You know, one of the things, we use warm water now with our citric acid blend, you know, versus cold water, and it's this much more effective. Oh,
that's there you go. Yeah, how about that?
Thanks. That's exciting. Yeah. So we have a very, very super intelligent, super inspired staff to work with, and they're great friends with each other, and they all just had a big party together at one of their houses, and so it's a wonderful community of like-minded folks.
That's awesome. That's awesome. If people want to order the food or reach out to you to learn more, how can they reach out to you?
Well, there's two ways. I mean, the website is super, you know, and on that website, they can either order bacon because there is no place near them, or if they go to find bacon near me and they find that there is, you know, that there are stores, there's a cute little health food store down the way that has it. Oh, great. You know, but if not, they can order from us. And for now, basically, if they order more than $50 worth of bacon, the shipping is free. If they order less than, it's a set $15, and that's for overnight refrigerated shipping. So we're really, you know, that's one of the reasons we're not breaking even. We're, you know, basically we also give discounts the more they buy. So if you're really smart, you find 12 friends and order a case and everybody gets a package. And that's the cheapest bacon will ever be, is to order it online like that. There'll be no shipping cost, and you get a highly discounted product. You'll never see that at your store. Don't tell the stores that I said that. This is a private recording, right?
Yeah. Nobody's going to listen to this. No. Awesome. Well, I appreciate you taking the time. And, you know, as the company continues to grow, you come out with new products. I mean, I would love to circle back and visit again, because, you know, this is, you know, obviously it's not just helping the planet, but you're making people healthier. And I think at the core, a lot of the issues that people are facing health-wise are due to their diets. And, you know, this is a great way to, you know, be able to treat your taste buds, but still treat your body.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I've been around animal slaughter, and that's why I was so interested myself with, you know, with some of the places that are coming out with, you know, vegetarian things and having great hope. And we've given a lot of people hope who are meat eaters. They're, you know, they really have their eyes open.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, thanks again, and I'll talk to you soon.
Thank you. Take care. Appreciate it, John.